have ignition sequence start. The engines are on. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast, a place for conversation with church leaders about social media, web trends, and anything else our host wants to talk about. Neil Smith is the Vice President of Social Media and Innovation at Denham & Company, lives in Texas, loves the Spurs, and exploring the world with his family. Jay Cranda is the online pastor at Saddleback Church, lives in California, loves the Lakers and drinking black cold brew coffee, and once could do a heel flip. To engage with the show, use the hashtag SMC Podcast. Let's join the show.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. My name is Ajay Kranda, and I'm joined by, we're just very nice, Neil Smith.
Yeah, no, it's close enough for you, Jay. I'm just happy that you weren't a caller today.
I know.
It must be business professional day in the Saddleback offices.
I know. Everybody, this is what I do. Whenever we record videos, I always choose to record, I choose shirts that are like literally the worst for cameras. And so like right now, my camera on my computer is not picking this up. So everybody watching on Apple TV, Amazon Fire, and Roku will be like, what is going on with Jay's shirt? Anyways.
Wait, Jay, we have a Roku channel?
So tvapp.church, if you're listening, you guys have been hearing on this journey, we submitted our first app last Friday, actually. We are like in the final stages, so it should be hitting the store here in the next couple days. And so, yes, it's there. I say I have it because I've had the beta app on my Roku, so I know what it looks like. But everybody else, be looking for that. We'll share more about that. So, awesome. Dude, so much going on in the world of social. We're going to talk about Snapchat changing their name to Snap and releasing glasses, from stuff going on the debate. But I wanted to first ask, did you get a chance to watch the debate at all?
Jay, I watched the debate.
Did you?
It was an interesting debate.
Yeah.
We're not going to get into politics too much here, as we feel like that's good advice for most pastors.
Yes.
But it was fascinating from a social perspective, all kinds of social, all over the place, before, after, during. It was crazy.
Did you
watch the debate? And okay, I did. Did you watch it, and where did you watch it? Because there were about 27 options.
Yeah, I know. I watched it mainly on my television through DirecTV, a very traditional route. I also checked it out on Twitter.
Yep.
I saw it was live there, so I kind of watched it that way. But so I definitely
live stream it in the Twitter app like you do football?
Yeah, I was watching.
Wow, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was going. I mean, but that's the thing now. I'm watching it, but I'm also on like Facebook and on Twitter seeing what people were saying. I mean, People were like, you were not being nice to Lester. Poor Lester. I mean,
including the candidates.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. Like, I don't know what the moderator is supposed to. If you don't give him it's like he's given a job. But if he doesn't have the power to kill their mics, like, what do you expect? Like, I don't – yeah, anyways, I thought it was a fun debate. I will say a couple things that stood out for me just thinking about as a pastor, thinking about digital strategy, moving people into community. One of the most amazing things that I thought that was really well done was Hillary did something mid-debate when Trump was saying something crazy. She said we're going to be real-time fact-checking everything that Trump says. Go to my website to check out the real-time fact-checking reality checks. And I thought that was such a brilliant idea to take this – I mean, they were saying 100 million people were going to be watching this debate. And she said now there are going to be crazy things said on both sides. Trump is obviously going to say some more outlandish, crazy things. But to tell people – to go to her website, that's her trying to take people through the funnel. Yeah. That how do I get somebody at 100 million? How can I just get 10% to visit the website? Because if I can get them on my website, maybe I can get 10% of those people. I thought that was a great way to funnel people down. I'm not thinking politically, but I'm just thinking great strategy.
So let's talk about the funnel just so we can understand the tactic. Yeah. So she wants to get them to the website. And what do you think she wanted to do? Or did you go down that process with her? Where do you think she wants to take them?
Well, I think the big thing is she wants to add them either as a like, a follow, or an email address. And I think she would value the email address as the highest priority still now, because you can get you can guarantee the content will get to in front of their eyes. Facebook and Twitter are a little bit of a variable because of their restrictions.
Yeah.
And so email is still, I mean, we talk about this, email is still very much king in a way because you can guarantee you can go to their inbox. So I did not go to the real-time fact check right then, but what I was figuring that if you go there, you saw the real-time updates and there was probably something at the base at our footer that was like, hey, join the cause or learn more about what we actually support. And so, and she might even at her level might even have some geographical things. Well, I might recognize what state you're coming from, where it talks directly to you. Yeah. I mean, her site's probably fairly sophisticated.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. If you can get an email address, you can continue to communicate with that person. So if I'm one of these candidates and I think I get their email address, I'm not thinking necessarily about donations towards the campaign. What I'm thinking about is, can I get their email address to, over the next, few weeks, send them an email every couple of days with maybe information they might be interested in that's going to compel them for their vote. I think that's a clear strategy. Hillary did do a great job of driving that. I think Trump did another interesting tactic on the event, and I didn't know where you filled me in on this, Jay. He created the crooked Hillary Snapchat filter.
Yes. Which is really interesting going out. I mean, I don't know if this is like he's directly trying to target a demographic that he may be missing. And so he's trying to kind of bring to the fold a younger generation that doesn't necessarily always lean Republican or maybe align with a lot of the values that Trump is kind of communicating from. So it's a really strategic. I think it's a very direct bullet at a certain individuals to try to get them in. And so, yeah, it was a filter that was targeted. And the idea was to take a photo of the, of her at the event and kind of like have fun with her on the Snapchat. And the article that I was reading on Mashable, it definitely seemed like they were trying to like, it had to be a very expensive buy because Snapchat, you can register geo filters on Snapchat. But the problem is that if you do any branding, you have to pay for it. If you do it as a community filter with a geotag, you don't have to pay for it. So if you just do your city, then you're fine. Yeah. But if you do like Disney or whatever, that doesn't work that way. And I've done this. I had a friend, for this job that they were asking me to do, where they wanted me to buy a branded geo filter for an event. And what you do is that you actually go on Snapchat and you can pay and you can take a geo area and you can say, and you literally drop dots on a map and you say like within this fence, I want everybody within this fence to get this geo filter from this time to this time. But the problem is depending on how big your radius is, depending how long your event is, that's how much it costs. So I remember I did like a 3-hour event just in the city of Irvine, and it was something like $800 to have this geo filter on at this event, but it was going to be for a social event. So let alone the buy for that's got to be crazy, but it's definitely a strategic angle. And I thought it was pretty smart. It showed that, they're up on it.
So that's fascinating. Both tactics, very interesting and honestly pretty smart. We're going to get back to Snapchat because we've got some interesting news from Snapchat. And then I've got a wild card question for you, Jay, that we're going to get to at the end of the show that you don't yet know about. It's going to be really good. Just ahead. It's going to stump you. I'm convinced.
Well, talk more into your skillet there, and then let's see what's going on here.
Jay, that's cute. That's cute. So here's the question, Jay. This is not the wild card question. This is the hot seat question. Who should pastors vote for? Who should?
Oh my gosh! No, I'm diverting.
And let our listeners know after the thing last night. Who do you think? Wants to know what you think.
I'm going to do a sleight of hand here. Did you see Philip Yancey that came out? His story went viral. He did a video interview with the Huffington Post, writer of the message and so forth.
Right.
He came out and very much he had this video that was trending. Obviously, it's trending on my settings. Which I still find that really interesting. Like, I'm always curious. I know Facebook's trending is a little fine-tuned for me, so I don't always necessarily know what is universally trending. But Philippi, as he said, pretty much like, you know, I don't understand how Christians can get behind Trump, because he is literally the anti-hero of what the Christian gospel communicates. And so he said that. Then you have like Wayne Grudem, who said like Trump is morally the best choice because of Supreme Court, because of everything that Hillary stands for. And so, you know, and kind of made it, so you kind of have this extreme, it's a divide. I am not answering that question. I'm not even going to make you answer that question. I want to know, I'm going to move forward.
But let's talk about this though. Seriously, Jay.
I think you
handled that very well by dodging the question. Pastors do not need to tell people who, that's my opinion. Pastors do not need to tell people who to vote for. The pastor I greatly respect from San Antonio, Max Licato, actually came out not too long ago against Donald Trump as well, just saying, kind of saying the same thing as a Christian, I don't think I can vote for Donald Trump. It's an interesting dilemma in the world of evangelicals, this election. Here's a stat I heard from one of our clients, Concerned Women for America, shared a stat that only 25% of Christians, only 50% of evangelical Christians are registered to vote in America, and only 50% of those voted last election. Mm. So that's a very small number when you look at it. So my perspective for pastors, as we talk about politics, is you have to be very careful as you address specific issues. We dealt with it as a church, you know, a couple of years ago when our pastor just said a couple of things from the pulpit and really got in the hot seat around the election. And this is really hot, you know, these topics and these candidates and sensitive for a lot of people. But I do believe that pastors do have, I don't know, responsibility is a strong word, but I feel like they have a significant opportunity that they should encourage their congregants to vote and to be a part of our country in electing our next president. Do you agree, disagree? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, I think as a church, we are worried about the expansion of God's kingdom, not the earthly kingdom. You know, ultimately, you know, that is part of God's kingdom, but the Bible says that it's not being ruled by him directly right now. Yeah. There's lawlessness and so forth. So I'm always surprised when people are shocked when things don't go a certain way here. I'm like, did you get to the end of your Bible? Like, did you finish the whole thing? Because it kind of talks about this. Yeah. And I know we've kind of lived in a vacuum in the last, you know, 100 years where within America, we've had this thriving kind of, you know, there's been some ideals that have been upheld, but that is always going to be a short term. I mean, kingdoms upon kingdoms have failed. And so I think, you know, only God's going to get certain things done. Man is it. But at the same time, I think as a church, we are worried about people's eternal destiny, not their temporary, you know, political, you know, stance. And so, and I see politically when you say certain things on social media, I think it's such a wall to be able to have a deeper conversation. I would much rather talk about who Jesus is than talk about why you shouldn't vote for, you know, Trump or Hillary, because that is such a layered landmine filled arena. And go to the spiritual direction, and then you can kind of start unpacking some of those reasons of the framework. Because to me, at the end of the day, no one's happy with either candidate. And even if you're going to vote for one, you're probably not proud of it. And so it's such a tattered, messy place. People are messy. They're hurt. And you don't want another wall to go up before you even get to the whole faith conversation. So I think we need to encourage people to vote. Voting is a right and a privilege. It is a luxury in today's world, and even in history, we should vote. And there should be education in that process. But we're worried about big things. And a lot of this stuff is important, but it's not our sole responsibility as a church. So,
yep. That's a good point. Good perspective. It will until the election is over, it's going to be sticky. And I think pastors need to be careful, but they need to be, you know, just proactive and strategic in how they address these things, because you're going to have congregants come to you and say, I don't understand why you won't do this or say this or take this stand. And don't be reactive to those people that are going to come to you, because they're going to come to you. Be prepared
to respond. And the last thing is, I would just say there's two arenas here. There's the outward facing kind of community communication strategy, and then there's the internal. I think a lot of our weekend and what we're saying to the public is we're trying to reach people. And when we're communicating out, we might not necessarily expect them to believe or agree with everything. So we're going to be very strategic in how we communicate. Now, internally, for our church, we have membership. You become a member of our church and hold you to a different standard, and we communicate to you because we know you've made a faith commitment. So we know we can say, here's this and this. I don't think there's certain things, like when you're talking about, let's say, evolution on the weekend, yeah. I think, are people really like, dinosaurs and man walk together? Like, is that really like going to bring people to faith? No, that's an internal conversation. Same-sex marriage, is that really going to bring people? No, that's an internal conversation.
Yep.
And so you got to, I mean, that's a communication plan, and yep. that's how we layered it. So it is a very important thing. I think we Christians need to continue to get good at it, because it's only going to get a little rougher. And we need to get wiser in how we talk about these things, because we do have a worldview, and people need to understand our worldview to understand what we're saying. We need to understand what their worldview to understand how to at least work together. And so sometimes we just think they should just listen. No, people are people, and it's conflict resolution. You need to figure that out. So, okay. Snapchat. What do you think about them change two things? What do you think about them changing their name to Snap? And then what do you think about the glasses?
I think a smart move on the name Snap, which tells us it's going to be a lot bigger. Their plan is to be a lot bigger than a mobile app. So that's interesting. And obviously it's bigger because they're now integrating some kind of hardware with these Snap spectacles, which are similar to Google Glass, but much more basic. So I've been reading up on the spectacles. I think they're $130, $129. They've got three different colors. They look like they're made for girls, to be honest. And so I'm interested just even to see who buys these and what the adoption rate is. Where Google Glass, I couldn't see any female ever getting those. Does that make sense? They were made for nerdy dudes. And so it's an interesting target. Bright colors, you know, but basically you can take a 10, 20, or 30 second video and directly, you know, upload it as a snap store, yeah. You know? So it's interesting. They're not that expensive, you know, for what it is.
Yeah.
And it's a unique perspective. I don't know, you know, if I've heard some friends say, I think this is going to be the biggest bomb, you know, in Snapchat's history. I think it's going to get quite a bit of engagement. I'm curious when they're going to release, if they're going to be before Christmas, and that could be a big popular Christmas gift for teenagers, or what's going to happen. But they're doing something really unique and new, and it's interesting.
I think it's such a play to the core community, and I think that's a lot of companies and churches forget about this. You know, we're so outreach focused, or so, which is not a bad thing, but you forget, like, how do you make your core people more loyal? Mm-hmm. Because the more you can get the core people to become more loyal, the stronger your kind of, you know, your digital evangelists become. And potentially that's, you know, that's the true multiplication model. And so this is like Yelp. To me, this is like, what do they call it? The Yelp super, I'm forgetting the name of it, but Yelp has like the core community of people that it's like Yelp All-Stars or Yelp, I'm forgetting it right now, but they do like local events for like people who really Yelp hardcore. Yeah. And the idea is that if they focus their money on building up their core, that DNA will rub off on everybody else. And I think not everyone's going to buy them, but I think what you're going to have is the people that are really into Snapchat, I think that they really are going to get into it. And I think it's just crazy marketing that you're going to be able to, from the design and from everything, you're going to see people walking around with it, and you're going to be thinking about Snapchat. So yeah. I don't think it's going to be like they're going to sell millions of them, but I do think it's going to be easy promotion. And I think it's going to be a good success for Snapchat, for Snap. I also think the name is wise. It's the whole, you know, it's the whole conversation we were having years ago about is media really, do we need to say social anymore? It's just social media is media. And so I think it makes sense, because now you know, these social companies are becoming less about, you know, being, you know, one or the other. They're just one. And yeah. It's just kind of, you know, chat, or, you know, it's just, it's one thing. Hey, snap, you just kind of assume. And it speaks to their powerhouse. Like, they can do that. Because it makes, when I heard it, I was like, that makes, you know, it's like Facebook, like book now, like why, you know, like, and you're kind of like, well, that's because it, the age it came in.
Yep.
So it speaks more to where we're at now. And I love that as a company, they're that agile. Like that is just, that's a huge change. And so that speaks more to about the culture of their team and their future. And I'm really pumped for it.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting, I'm really interested to see. So I posted it on Facebook, and then I posted my prediction is that in the next year, we will see Insta glasses, and they'll basically be Facebook's version of these glasses that you can post to Instagram or Facebook Live out of them, or take a picture and send it to, you know, like they'll be a little more complex in what they do. But just like Instagram copied Snapchat and basically said, you know what, Snapchat taught our users how to use this medium, and we just integrated it into our app. Thanks, Snapchat. I think the same thing will happen. Is teenagers are the most creative human beings in the world. You know, we become less creative the older we get. And teenagers are going to do some crazy creative things with these glasses. And I think you and I will watch it and be like, okay, now that when these next round comes out and it's for the masses, and I think Facebook is still going to own the masses. Snapchat continues to expand in their niche, I feel like, and they're getting wider, but I don't think it's ever going to be a mass audience, is my opinion. I think it's going to continue to be a niche audience that just grows more committed to the platform. And so I think I expect to see others coming out in glasses that have more functionality. These are very limited. I also expect it to be a partnership with like Nike or with Ray-Ban or something like that. And so they just integrate the technology into those glasses. But dude, it's going to be interesting. It's a fascinating.
Well, and it speaks more to like the value, like how stuff is obviously like internet connected things is becoming cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching this. I finally watched the Steve Jobs movie over the weekend.
Okay.
And you know, they were talking about, you know, like the whole Macintosh, how it failed the first time and
every
time it was successful. But you know, one of the biggest things outside of just all into things, you know, it just, the technology caught up with his vision and it was more affordable. They could launch a computer that was super, that could do a lot of the styling and the coloring, and they could design it in such a way. And so I think Snapchat's glasses are just at a, even though it's not too long ago, I think Google Glass, I think just a couple of years, it's huge in technology investment. And I know it's way cheaper for them to pull off what they want to pull off. And so, I just think we're going to see more and more of this type of stuff. And I like it. I mean, I think it's just Loyal Tribe, Seth Godin kind of stuff. It makes sense to me. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not going to get them. It's not me, but I could see the Snapchat community doing it for sure. Sure. Okay, what's your wild crazy thing?
Well, one last thought on the Snapchat, the glasses.
I don't care how many times I try to pivot. It's just like I can't.
It's good, but I was, even as you were talking, you started this in my mind, is I think it opens up the opportunity for augmented reality. And so as you think about like Pokemon Go and some of these other things, if you've got glasses connected to this technology, you have all kinds of other opportunities. I don't think Snapchat has that in this play of this product. I think that's the quickness of their pivot to get to this point. But I think as these technologies expand, I think augmented reality is going to be a big part of that. So that's going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the wild card question for you, Jay. At Dunham & Company, we always hear, or what people want when they come to us is, what's the magic bullet in fundraising? What did I not know about fundraising? And they want this like secret sauce. Well, the reality is there's not a secret sauce to fundraising. It's hustle. It's being creative. It's working hard. It's telling great stories. It's there's strategy involved, but there's not one magic bullet. Social media, you and I know the same thing. People want to know, what's the magic bullet to social media? Like, if I just start doing Facebook Live, I'm going to be huge on Facebook, right? Or what's the magic bullet to a viral video? So I'll just go ahead and state there is no magic bullet, but if you were to nail down, here is one thing about social media that maybe is a magic bullet, or if people would just do this, they would go to another level. what would you say that magic bullet is?
I would honestly say no, not a fear of failure. Like, I think at the end of the day, I had a friend ask me something about something I do and some job stuff. And they're like, well, how did you do this? And I'm just kind of like, man, I think early on, I've always been confident enough and just like a bunch of a doer enough that I just do it. Like, and I just figure it out as I'm going. Saddleback, we have this whole thing that we're building the airplane in the air kind of idea. Yeah. And I think you just need to not have a fear of failure. And it's the transition of people from professional writers to bloggers. Well, I got to polish my book and it takes a year and an editor and blah, blah, blah. Well, blah, you go up and if you want to edit it, you edit it after you post it. And I think the same thing with social media. I think one of the things, the reason why personally I understand certain platforms is that I just go out and mess around, make mistakes, have edit errors, say the wrong thing. You know, that is part of it. And I think because I know that I have that mentality where it's okay for me to fail, I think I'm not worried about whatever platform they throw my way because I'm going to mess around with it. And I might make an idiot of myself, but I've learned now over the course of, you know, 7-8 years of kind of, you know, some of the pit holes to go through. But I think fearing failure is probably one of the most important things, especially when you're thinking about social media technology.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I would add to, I mean, I think that's exactly right. Of like, jump in and just do it and don't be afraid of what happens. I would expand that to almost say, don't fear video. You know, I already say, here's one thing to do. It's make one video a day for the next 365 days. And if you're really wanting to build an audience on social media, one video a day for the next 365 days. And I guarantee you are going to have an audience. No matter how bad that video is for your first 50 videos or 100 yeah. videos, at the end of 1 year, you're going to be really good at it. And you're going to have a really engaged audience and you're going to be really ready to go. Yeah. Don't be afraid of video. Jump into it because that's at the core of social media and where it's growing and where it's going. And so dig into that. Don't be afraid and go kick butt at social media and reach people with the gospel.
Well, we've talked about politics, snap, glasses, magic bullets. I mean, we just hit everything. So if you got any feedback or any questions about anything we talked about on the show, use the hashtag SMC podcast. While Twitter still owns it and Disney doesn't buy it, we will still use Twitter like crazy. And go to socialmedia.church to learn more about our show. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Social Media Church Podcast. To learn more about the host, the show, or suggest a future topic, check out socialmedia.church. If you liked what you heard, then take a couple minutes to leave a review on iTunes. Every review helps. Lastly, share the podcast with a friend and use the hashtag SMC Podcast to engage with the host. Thanks again for listening.